Hi, my name is Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. You can find the show at theastrologypodcast.com, and you can also listen to us on iTunes. Today is Friday, February 13th, 2015. It's approximately 2:01 p.m. here in Denver, Colorado, and this is the 25th episode of the show. In this episode, I'll be talking with astrologer Ryan Butler about the concept of reception. Ryan has recently lectured on this topic at the NCGR and ESAR conferences, and he's also published a series on reception on the website for the Association for Young Astrologers. He's been writing, and I originally became friends with Ryan through his writing at a popular blog called StarlightNightAstrology.com. And more recently, he's launched a comprehensive online resource for the theory, techniques, and practice of medieval astrology at medievalastrologyguide.com. So, Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me. You know, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks. Yeah. We've known each other, I think, since like 2008 or so, or even earlier than that. I've been, you know, reading your blog, and I think you've been reading mine, and we've sort of exchanged posts. But this concept of reception, actually, I think is a great, I'm glad that this worked out, because I know that this is one of your favorite concepts, and it's something that you've been lecturing on, and then it just so happened, I guess I should set the stage for why we're doing this episode. So there was a discussion about reception on Nina Griffin's Facebook page a week or two ago, after she posted a article on her blog, the Griffin Astrology blog, about reception and about the potential use of reception to identify mitigating factors when it comes to afflictions in the chart. And then there was this debate that arose about some of the finer details of reception. So I thought it would be good to do a show where we talk about and outline the concept of reception for those that aren't familiar with it. And then we'll talk about this specific use of it as a mitigating factor and this debate that's come up about when that mitigating factor is applicable versus when it isn't. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, okay. So let's start by defining our concept. So let's define the concept of reception. How do you define reception?
I've always really liked Robert Hand's sort of summary of it. It's very brief and very easy to remember. It's that reception occurs anytime a planet aspects any one of its lords, and that's any one of the five sort of traditional forms of rulership: the domicile lord of the, you know, the planet that rules the sign, the exaltation lord of the triplicity term or face. And what's really important in that definition that gets overlooked a lot in contemporary works is the need for an aspect, like the need for an aspectual contact to be there to sort of cement it.
Sure. So in modern definitions, when people talk about reception, they usually talk about mutual reception, which in a modern context usually just means two planets in each other's domiciles or in the signs that the other rules, and there's no talk about whether they're aspecting each other. But that was actually a crucial piece of the original definition of reception, right?
Right, right. And it's actually kind of funny because I feel like a lot of that sort of misunderstanding about reception, because I feel like a lot of times for people who are new to reception, the only reception they really know about is mutual reception. So they tend to think that that's all reception is. And I tend to blame William Lilly for that. Because in Christian astrology, when he's talking about his little part where he defines different terms, his example for reception is, you know, the Sun in Aries trine, Mars and Leo, a mutual reception by domicile. So okay. I feel like that really like stuck to a lot of people, like, oh, that's what it is. But it's really terrible because later on in a lot of his examples, he uses the correct, I guess, or more broad definition of it effectively.
So yeah, let's break it down. I mean, the simplest form, and I think from my perspective, the primary form, and what I at least think was the original form of reception, because it's the only one that I can find in the Hellenistic text. So reception doesn't really fully get defined until the medieval tradition, but there's sort of allusions to it conceptually, I think, in the Hellenistic tradition, and I've been able to find at least one explicit statement by Valens, who is an astrologer from the 2nd century, where he says, this is kind of the Hellenistic equivalent of reception, I think. And what he says is, this is from Book 7, Chapter 2 of the Anthology, from Riley's translation. He says, one star in another star's sign or domicile and having some relationship with it is productive and beneficial during the applicable time lordship. So one planet being in the sign that another planet rules, and then being aspected by the ruler of that sign was somehow seen as favorable, is the like takeaway from that. Mm-hmm. And from what I've seen in the very broadest definitions and basic definitions of reception, even in the medieval tradition, that would still be a more or less accurate definition, except from a strict standpoint, what reception is one planet being in a sign that's ruled by another planet, if we're just talking about reception by domicile, and then applying to an exact aspect so that the next aspect it will make is with the ruler of that sign. So let's give an example of that. Actually, right now, as we're recording this lecture, we have a great example of reception where Jupiter is in Leo and the moon is in Sagittarius, and the moon is at 15 degrees of Sagittarius, and it's applying to an exact trine, the next aspect that the moon will make, and is an exact trine with Jupiter. And since the moon is in Jupiter's sign, which is Sagittarius, that's the sign that Jupiter rules or calls its home, then that means that Jupiter receives the moon into its domicile. Is that more or less a pretty good example of reception as far as you're concerned?
That's pretty perfect. Almost planned, one might say.
You might say that. So one of the things maybe we should talk about then is what the conceptual basis for, because I think that's really the best way to understand it. And sometimes if you skip over it and just think about it as a technical definition, it can be harder to understand what it really is implying. So the conceptual basis for reception, I would argue, is primarily rooted in the Hellenistic idea of the guest-host relationship, where each of the planets and each of the signs of the zodiac, each of the planets was conceptualized as ruling one or sometimes two signs of the zodiac. But the conceptual basis of that was that the planets literally, or not literally, but figuratively, metaphorically, considered the sign of the zodiac that they rule to be its home or its dwelling place, or the place that it has some familiarity with and calls its domicile. The extension of that is that when a planet is not in its own sign, it's away from home and it's staying in the home of another planet. So, for example, the moon calls its home Cancer, so that's where it lives. But today, for example, it's in Sagittarius, which is the home of Jupiter. And the conceptual sort of extension of that, which is actually explicitly talked about by some authors like Firmicus, is that when a planet's staying away from home, it needs to rely on the planet that rules the sign that it's in for support. It needs to, as a guest in another planet's domicile or home, it needs to rely on the owner of that home for support, and in order to sort of give it some support while it's traveling.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so I think that's the conceptual basis originally of this concept of reception, and then it gets clearly defined as a sort of technical concept in the medieval tradition, where in the strictest definition for reception to take place, the planet has to be in a sign that it doesn't rule, and it has to be aspecting or applying to an exact aspect with the ruler of that sign. And from an interpretive standpoint, if that happens, generally it was viewed as positive, right?
Yes.
So, in the same way, basically, you want, some of this goes back to the terminology that was used in terms of the actual term. So, we get the term reception from the Latin word that was used in the medieval astrological text, receptio, which means the act of receiving, or to welcome, or to admit somebody into your home or into your domicile, as if there's a guest coming to your house, like if somebody's visiting, and you receive them sort of happily into your place, your residence, so to speak. And this goes all the way back through the Arabic text, where they use the word Kabul, apparently, or Kabila, which means to, which, yeah, I'm sure I'm butchering.
I mean, I just go. Just give it a shot. Don't look back and go.
Yeah. Like, which means to accept or to receive someone, to agree, to yield, to approve, to admit, or to accept. And then this further goes back. The Arabic is probably a translation of the original Greek term, hupodoxe, which means reception or hospitality or acceptance or support. And that idea of like hospitality is interesting because you can think of like modern conceptualizations of like the hospitality industry and, you know, people going to hotels and then sort of rating their experience, so to speak, of
sure.
how hospitable was the mm-hmm. environment that they while they were staying away from home in this place and how well were they treated at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So conceptually, our sort of access point there is, especially by integrating the concept of the aspect, does the ruler of that sign aspect the planet that's staying there as a guest in its domicile? You know, is your host being attentive to you while you're staying at their house, or mm-hmm. is your host not paying attention to you and therefore not being supportive of you while you're staying at their house? Okay, so we give one example of reception, maybe a few other examples, because these come directly from the first text, as far as I know, that was dedicated to the concept of reception, which is by the 9th century astrologer Masha Allah. Is it 9th? It's like early 9th or late 8th century, basically.
870, I think.
I think it's from Masha Allah.
Seven. Yeah. Whoa, I was way off. I think I was thinking of Abu Mashar. Yeah. Masha Allah is like around 740.
Okay, so so earliest text, here it's a text that's usually known as On Reception. It's a little short booklet. It was first translated by Robert Hand in the late 90s, early 2000s, and then Ben Dykes has done a more recent translation of it. Either of them are acceptable for our purposes, but two of the examples he gives right at the beginning is he gives an example where he says if Saturn is at 20 Aries and Mars is at 15 Aries, then both planets are in the domicile of Mars, and Mars is applying to a conjunction within 5 degrees of Saturn. So in that instance, because they're both in the domicile or the home of Mars, and Mars is applying to and aspecting Saturn, it means that Mars receives Saturn in that instance. Elsewhere, he gives another example with, let's say, Saturn is at 20 degrees of Aries, and Mars is at 10 degrees of Capricorn. So in that instance, this is what you were referring to would be classified as a mutual reception, because Saturn in Aries is in Mars's domicile and Mars in Capricorn is in Saturn's domicile. So they're exchanging signs, but they're also applying towards an exact aspect. And mm-hmm. that's sort of a crucial piece of that. Applying to an exact aspect is this stricter right. definition.
Right. Because Mashallah makes the point that like, if there's anybody in the way, if there's anybody closer to Saturn than Mars is, then Mars is no longer being received by Saturn, because I think the word he uses is like there's somebody more. I lost the word.
Sure, but it can be interrupted. The aspect can be interrupted.
Yeah, it can be interrupted. There's somebody more deserving of Saturn's attention.
Okay. So that's the first thing that people need to understand is that in the strict traditional or classical definition, it's one planet being in the sign of another, and then an applying classical aspect, which is a conjunction, sextile, square, trine, or opposition between those two planets, mm-hmm. with no interruptions. There may be broader definitions in the sense that I think when I was rereading Abu Mashar a bit ago, that he seems to have mm-hmm. a loose definition or like a weak version of reception, which is just one planet being in the domicile of another and then there being like a sign-based aspect between those two. But that's...
Yeah, there are definitely sort of categories with reception. You'll have strong or what's later called perfect receptions, and then you'll have weak or imperfect receptions. Mm. And the strong receptions are those that are like Mashallah gives, you know, the Saturn or a Mars immediately applying to Saturn. Mm-hmm. Like that's a strong reception. And then like weaker receptions or imperfect receptions are those that are just by triplicity, you know, just by one of triplicity term or face. So it could be like totally possible that the lack of an aspect, but still being in the sign of another planet could be that weaker, like could still fall within that weaker. Because Ibn Ezra uses the term generosity or like liberality to differentiate between the two reception,
okay.
like those two receptions.
Of like a degree-based applying aspect versus just a sign-based mm-hmm. sort of relationship.
Yes.
Okay. And that brings up and takes us back to another point, which is it seemed to me in reading On Reception, like, I think conceptually, since I can only find that one reference in the Hellenistic tradition in Valens, and this whole idea seems to have come from the idea that the planets were conceptualized as calling certain signs of the zodiac their homes or dwelling places, which is dignity by domicile, mm-hmm. that reception probably first related strictly to domicile, I would think, in the Hellenistic tradition when it was not very well defined. And then in Masha'Allah, he seems to primarily define reception as taking place either by domicile or exaltation.
Mm-hmm.
But then by the time of Saul, who is a student or a contemporary of Masha'Allah, and then definitely in Abu Mashar, we see them also taking into account triplicity, term, and face, so all five of the medieval or classical dignities.
Well, but even in Masha'Allah, you have little hints or implications that might not be all, because later he'll, not necessarily later, but early in the book, he'll talk about the sun receiving planets, and he'll say that the sun projects his light over a star by the recognized aspects without a strong reception. You know, he uses that word, strong reception, and earlier he'll say, but then the sun destroys stars by combustion when it does not receive them by having a strong reception, namely by domicile and exaltation.
Right.
So that sort of implies that, you know, oh, well, the others are there, but they're not strong, and they're not really applicable in this sense. They don't save a planet from this concept.
And what Saul says really explicitly in the introduction is that he makes the distinction. He says domicile and exaltation are the two primary dignities through which you can have reception. And then he mentions triplicity, term, and face, but says that that's a lesser form of reception and that you need two of them to be present at the same time for it to really help.
Right.
So for my purposes, I personally just focus primarily on reception by domicile. I know more medieval astrologers and other people like yourself also include exaltation and everything else. But for the most part, I mean, I think it'll be easy enough to just talk about it by domicile or maybe exaltation for the purpose of this discussion.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're definitely easier to notice.
Yeah, they're easier to notice and they're clearly more powerful or more relevant.
Definitely.
So we'll be talking about reception, especially by domicile, which is pretty easy as the examples we've just demonstrated sort of explain what that explains. So one of the things, I mean, going back to that, and the reason why some of those other dignities got integrated, what seems to be implied underlying all of that is not just the guest-host relationship, but also one of the things I noticed is that Saul ibn Bishr in the late 8th, early 9th century, talks about reception as if the planets can see each other when they're aspecting each other and when they're in each other's domiciles or exaltations, and that they see each other as family or that they become related in some way, and therefore they welcome each other into their homes or into their domiciles, versus not recognizing each other as family, not recognizing any relationship or any familiarity or any similarities between the two planets, and therefore in some way refusing or disapproving of each other and not having a very congenial relationship in the chart as a result of that. And that seems to be the other part of the conceptual basis underlying this concept in medieval astrology, is this idea of, you know, two planets being conceptualized as people who have something in common and therefore get along versus two planets that don't have anything in common and therefore do not get along or actively disagree with each other in some way.
I really like that. I didn't know that was an analogy that Saul used, the family one, and I really like it. It reminds me of, I think, what is it, Olive Garden? When you're here, you're family.
Right. yes.
Come on in, have a breadstick. It's really interesting because I'd always kind of conceptualized it as strictly more host guest. You know, the host has a responsibility over his dwelling place. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to get Saturn to really do anything that you want, but he has certain responsibilities towards his homes of Aquarius and Capricorn, and is sort of more interested in duty bound in a way to help things happen that are happening there.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that totally makes sense. And yeah, I mean, all of this is just going back to the same collection of concepts, sort of just tied in that whole guest host relationship and the notion of affinity. And those really seem to be just core concepts that sort of echo throughout the traditional astrology for about 2,000 years, which is the idea of planets having an affinity. I mean, because this is kind of a complicated subject because modern astrologers conceptualize sign rulership entirely in terms of affinity.
Right.
And many traditional astrologers, especially starting in the early 1990s, have tried to push back against that and say that, you know, dignity was not just a matter of affinity, but it had to do with strength or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there really are concepts of affinity and of affinity tying together planets and tying planets to sectors of the zodiac and things like that in some sense.
Yeah, definitely not as over, not as, excuse me, it's not, I would say, the core of the scheme, but it is there as a shadow in some places.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the only factor. There's other factors such as symmetry, the symmetry of the right. domicile assignments. When it comes to the exaltations, we have other rationales that have to do with the interaction between the planet and its host, or between diurnal planets being in trines to one of their domiciles, or nocturnal planets being sextile to one of their domiciles, and so on and so forth. Another concept I think that you said that was tied into this conceptually was the concept of pushing management in medieval astrology.
Right.
How would you explain that?
Pushing management is really important for to understand why Mashallah makes the statement about, like, it has to be the next applying aspect, or else there's somebody else who's sort of more worthy or more deserving of the reception. And so for pushing management happens sort of in the background behind every applying aspect. Right now we have our lovely Jupiter moon trine. And as long as that trine is applying, the moon is sort of like pushing onto Jupiter. And what she's pushing is her signification, sort of what she right now wants to get done.
Mm-hmm.
This is easier to conceptualize in like horary or electional astrology, where like the moon's next aspect is like tends to be very critical in what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But so the moon right now is applying to Jupiter and trying to push what she wants to do to Jupiter. And it's up to Jupiter to kind of figure out what to do with what she's giving him.
Okay.
So if we're talking about this within like a reception context, the moon is in Jupiter's house and she has this project she wants to complete real bad, but she can't do it by herself, or she won't do it by herself. So she gives it to Jupiter. And then we have to see, then you go and you sort of click off this box of criteria to decide what Jupiter will eventually do with it. Like, what kind of aspect is it? Because hard aspects are more difficult to reconcile than like the trines and sextiles. So these are like your engagements, your aspects are.
Mm-hmm.
So right now the moon is applying this trine, which is like a nice sort of pleasant engagement with Jupiter. Jupiter is naturally a benefic planet, so he's probably more likely to agree to do it anyway. And Jupiter receives the moon. So all these really positive things about their relationship makes it more likely for Jupiter to take up and sort of perfect whatever matter the moon is trying to get done.
Okay, so pushing management is the lighter, the faster moving planet pushes its significations towards the slower moving planet?
Right, who then decides what to do with it.
Okay, got it. And then, so that's another part of the conceptual basis here, especially when we're talking about one planet applying to another.
Mm-hmm. I also think it's a good like differentiation. You mentioned how this was sort of tied back in the Hellenistic era to like a dispositorship,
right.
Like one planet being another planet's sign, or like counteraction, I think is the Hellenistic technical term, correct?
Yeah, that was a hugely important conceptual thing in Hellenistic astrology.
So for counteraction, very briefly, the idea is that planets are influenced by the strength of the lord of their sign. So, you know, having a strong ruler makes you more able. Is that the right word, more able?
Yeah, more or less.
Okay. And then having a more debilitated ruler, like, impedes you. And Firmicus Maternus makes the analogy that, you know, we share in our host's poverty or wealth. You know, if you're over at somebody's house and they have all this nice stuff, you obviously get to share in it and use that to help you out and do whatever you need to do. But if they don't have very much, then you don't have as many resources at your disposal. So that's kind of always happening with dispositorship. But the pushing management and the aspect that is necessary for most reception, or the strict sense of reception, sort of takes it off of the planet residing in the house and gives it more to the host. Like, it's now sort of the host's job to take care of it and to perform. Whereas in like a dispositorship or counteraction relationship, it's more like the host supporting.
Right.
So I think that's a pretty important distinction between those two concepts.
So say that again, just to summarize. So,
sure. Like when you have a dispositorship, right, or a reception without an aspect, we'll call it, then it's more like the lighter planet, we'll say, just for... Okay, let's take it back. We'll use our Jupiter-Moon example since it's still happening.
Okay.
Like if these two planets were not about to apply to each other, if there was somebody else in the way, then Jupiter would still influence the moon because, you know, she's in his house.
Okay. Jupiter is the ruler, the dispositor of the moon.
Right. And so Jupiter's condition would have an effect on what resources were available to the moon, with the understanding that the moon would still kind of have to figure out what to do with her significations. Mm-hmm. But with this applying aspect, the moon just kind of passes it over to Jupiter and is like, here, you take care of this.
Okay, so it completely hands over sort of the outcome of the situation or its own significations to Jupiter.
Right.
And that's, okay, so that's the pushing and that's the management, uh-huh, is the faster moving planet literally handing it over to, mm-hmm, the other planet. Okay, yeah, and I think that's a good point, and that'll come up in terms of our debate with the concept of counteraction because of the idea that a planet, when it's not in its own domicile, relies entirely on its domicile, or not entirely, but relies very heavily on its domicile lord for being able to get done what it needs to get done. And if the domicile lord is well placed in the chart, then the planet that's staying in that domicile will do well. But if the domicile lord of a planet that's staying away from its home is poorly placed, then that planet will have a hard time getting its job done in the chart. And the parts of the chart that it has control over will suffer as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about how this actually works in practice. One of the things... Well, there's a few different ways that it works in practice. One of them that is the most useful, I think, and one of the things that we're going to be talking about the most is that it strengthens relationships between planets, mm-hmm, there's different types of aspects, of course, and the aspects themselves in a chart denote relationships between planets, whereas a lack of aspects, or when planets are not aspecting each other, usually denotes a lack of aspect. But reception is another way that you can either have a relationship between two planets where one might not have existed before, or to more commonly, because aspect is usually part of the basic definition of reception, it actually strengthens the aspect, mm-hmm, or the relationship between the two.
Improves.
So, and improves, which brings us to our next point, which is that it can sometimes act as a mitigating factor for difficult types of relationships, so that sometimes those relationships can go more smoothly, or there can still be more constructive or positive outcomes to what would otherwise be difficult relationships between planets. Is that how you see it as well, or would you define it?
Yeah, no, it's definitely a relationship softener in a lot of cases.
Okay.
In that, like, you know, aspect or applications by opposition are typically inherently like adversarial or confrontational in some way, mm-hmm, and reception sort of smooths that out. Banati in his in book 6, he goes over like this sort of the ways in which reception assists specific aspects.
There's a great table for that on Deborah Holding's website that I'll link to in the post.
Right, yeah, that's really helpful. And basically, sort of the short version is that an aspect with reception is like the next harmonious aspect without reception. So that if you have an application by a square, but there's a reception there, then it's actually more like a sextile, because there's like that reception that gives it a sense of like friendship or... commonality, I guess, that strengthens that relationship a little bit better. But it's actually a little strange because you have this table by Banati where he says that, you know, there are different grades of reception according to the aspects. But then, like, he and Mashallah are also really big proponents of reception in that, oh, it never fails. Like, it's always this, like, this super booster that never fails.
Mm-hmm.
But having this little table makes it sound like, especially reception by opposition, maybe sometimes fails. So it's kind of this weird conceptual disconnect.
Sure. He says, I mean, the way that Holdings summarizes it is that a she says that a opposition between two planets in a horary chart between the two main significators. So the context of that is in a horary chart, you're usually trying to determine, you know, yes or no, will the desired thing that was inquired about come about? Mm-hmm. And if the two significators are applying through an opposition, but it's with reception, then she sort of summarizes it from Banati as saying it comes about only by demand and diligence and vehemence and great effort and persistence, mm-hmm. presumably on the part of the parties involved. But then right. she says, if there's an opposition between two significators in the horary chart without reception, then it comes only with the greatest labor and vehemence and demand and diligence and anguish and anxiety. Like it just keeps going on. Likewise, right. unhappiness as if after the desperation of friends and family, and then scarcely and never quite perfected, or if it is perfected with delay and slowness in its effect and indeed yeah. expense.
So really bad, basically.
Yeah, like you're really long shot if you've got an opposition between significators without reception. But if you have reception and it's an opposition, then it's still going to be difficult and it's still going to take extra striving in some sense, but that it's much more realistically going to come about mm-hmm. because the reception increases the relationship between those two planets and smooths the relationships, as you said earlier.
Yeah. So, you know, definitely useful, but I'm not sure that it's quite worthy of being touted as never failing with like words, like, you know, with that kind of effort need to put into it, I guess.
Maybe. I mean, yeah. I mean, and then there's the others, though, also the square where it's yeah. a little bit more. So she summarizes Banati as saying basically that the square, if two significators are applying to each other with reception, then it comes about through striving and diligent pursuit of the coordinate. So he has to exert a little bit of uh-huh. effort, but the thing can come about. But, right. but without reception, then it only comes about by demand and diligence and vehemence and great effort and persistence. Mm-hmm. So it's like there is this sort of gradation where an aspect between two planets shows the possibility of a connection and a relationship, and the nature of the aspect describes how smoothly it goes, but the presence of reception can enhance and make mm-hmm. things even smoother than they would be otherwise. Because it adds an additional form of relationship besides just the aspectual relationship.
Yes.
Okay, so that's a really important thing, because that's really the primary thing that reception is doing, I believe, is smoothing out those relationships, adding another means by which relationships can be strengthened. And then as a secondary, as we were just discussing, one of the things that can do is it can mitigate what are otherwise difficult placements in the chart or difficult aspectual relationships. Mm-hmm. So this brings us to our debate and the debate that came up last week, which is that Nina Griffin wrote a great article where she pointed out this property that's very important in traditional astrology and that I've found very important. I think most traditional astrologers, once they start seeing this in charts, they realize how important it is as well, and it comes up all the time, which is that sometimes when you have a malefic planet, when you have Mars or Saturn afflicting another planet through a difficult aspect, like a square or an opposition or a conjunction in a chart, that if there is reception between the malefic and the planet that's being afflicted, that sometimes this can act as a mitigating factor that will make the affliction much less severe, or in some instances even so almost quasi-constructive, where it wouldn't be otherwise. And the what I didn't realize is that I didn't realize that I had always been under the impression from my reading of Mashallah and my understanding of the Hellenistic tradition and then my application of it in chart examples, that this worked out if there was reception with the malefic that's afflicting the other planet, regardless of if the malefic is being received or regardless of if the malefic itself is receiving, that it can go either way and that'll act as a mitigating factor. But two or three of you actually in that thread pointed out that was not your interpretation of it, and that you saw this differently, both from a textual standpoint and from a practical standpoint, that it can only go one way for it to be a mitigating factor. Mm-hmm. So could you explain that a little bit?
Well, where should I start? So where a lot of, at least my interpretation of this comes from, is that it's talked about much more clearly in questions concerning like illness. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that should, for some reason, the querent or the individual is so ill that there's like a fear that this may take their life, that applications to the Lord of the Eighth House signifying death are typically going to be your, yeah, this person's probably going to die. But if the Lord of the Eighth House receives the Lord of the First House or the Moon, then they'll live because the Lord of the Eighth House, like, sort of, I wouldn't say takes pity on them, but it sort of restrains its malice, I think is what Bonatti says about it.
Okay.
It restrains its malice towards the Lord of the First House. And if you think about it within a context of like a host-guest kind of thing to where the host, where the host kind of does or performs whatever its guest wants them to do, well, if the Lord of the First House is pushing, you know, life, its life force to the Lord of the Eighth House, who then decides sort of what happens to it after that, then having that reception or not is going to sort of swing it one way or the other, because clearly the Lord of the First House wants to continue living. And so if there's that reception where the Lord of the Eighth receives that life, then it will spare it because it's going to do what its guest wants it to do. But without that reception, then it can be fatal. And I guess we can go ahead and just start it with this way. Mashallah sort of takes it in a bit more of like a... He has an example to where the Sun is Lord of the First House and Jupiter is Lord of the Eighth House. There's an application between the two, which is not good, but this will happen with the Sun in Pisces. So there's reception, so it is good. And he says that, however, if this were the other way around, this would be a weak reception, and the Lord of the Eighth won't, like, the term or the phrases will not wholly destroy. So the it seems to be saying that if the, on the other hand, if the Lord of the First House receives the Lord of the Eighth House, it's a weak reception and a weak protection from death, and the person's not killed, but it messes them up.
Okay.
So in that, like in that situation, you could say that if death receives life, then the person recovers. Like you could probably say recovers fully, or like retain or regains their vitality after their illness is healed. Mm-hmm. But the other way around, to where if the Lord of Life receives Lord of Death, you could say, according to Mashallah, well, it won't kill them, but the illness may last a long time. It may have, you know, they may deal with it for their entire life. It may have some other effect on their vitality going on into the future. Like there may be some sort of permanent side effects or something from like from that illness that was nearly fatal, but not fatal. Okay. And then around by the time of Bonatti, Bonatti very clearly says in his horary chapter on this that if the Lord of the Eighth House, if death receives an application from the Lord of the First House, then it's fine, they'll live. But if it's reversed, then it's fatal. And the idea seems to be that, you know, following on the host-guest relationship, that, or at least maybe Bonatti's interpretation of it, was that we're still doing what our guest wants us to do if we're the host. Like, we're trying to be good hosts because we have that responsibility towards them. Mm-hmm. And if life receives death, well, death probably wants to kill them, so the individual dies. And then Lily, in his own section regarding the same topic, will say, not quite as clearly as Bonatti, but his phrase is that if the Lord of the Eighth House receives Lord of the First House, but the Lord of the First House does not receive him back, then he'll live. So the implication seems to be that mutual reception itself is still dangerous for the individual. And if mutual reception is still dangerous, then clearly reception from or reception of the Lord of the Eighth House is still dangerous for the individual.
Okay. Yeah. And so, I mean, and those are the primary sort of texts, I think, that you guys picked up on. And in order to see this distinction or in order to promote this distinction, and let me backtrack a little bit. So, because I wanted to mention the names, because it was actually the other. It was another guy, astrologer from Poland named Kuba Ruzowski, who initially pointed this out, where Nina wrote the article about how malefic planets, if they're afflicting other planets, but there's reception, that there can be a mitigation. And I had actually just had a client like that the previous night, where they had like Gemini rising, And Mercury was the ruler of the ascendant, so it's one of the most important planets in the chart, especially in terms of the person's sort of like life vitality and maybe sort of direction or focus in life in general in terms of its house placement. But Mercury was, it was a night chart, and Mercury was applying within 3 degrees to a square with Mars, if I'm, okay, Mercury was in Sagittarius, and it was applying within 3 degrees to a square with Mars in a day chart, which was in Virgo. And so Mars, in that instance, being in Virgo, would be in one of the domiciles of Mercury. And therefore, with Mercury applying to a square within 3 degrees with Mars, would be reception. I mean, nobody would argue that that would be an example of reception.
Right.
I saw that as a mitigating factor, because basically she did not have, in the way that she described her life, she did not have the major issues with that Mars Mercury in a day chart square, because in a day chart Mars becomes more malefic, and so
It was a day chart. I thought you said it was a night chart previously.
No, it was definitely a day chart. So this is like a fully malefic Mars,
which
is the part that concerned me the most. Because usually if you have a fully malefic Mars and it's in a superior position, so that it's earlier in zodiacal order, it's in a hard aspect, in this case a square, and if the square is actually applying, so that that's the next aspect that the ruler of the ascendant makes, is that is completing that exact square with a superior contrary to the sect Mars, then we're talking like almost worst case scenario type situation here, where we're talking major bodily injury, or even if we're just talking about that configuration itself and on its own, and even the way that modern or some traditional astrologers would define it in terms of Mercury-Mars combinations and the person perhaps, you know, mouthing off and getting themselves into trouble. Or what have you. But in fact, she was able to use it in a much more constructive way. And the way, the reason for that that I saw was because of the presence of reception, where Mercury, because it received Mars as a result of Mars being in Virgo in Mercury's domicile, that it created a better relationship or a better familiarity between those two planets, and it softened the sort of hardness of the square. But what Kuba pointed out, this astrologer from Poland pointed out, is that Nina, he pointed out, wrote it in an article about the malefic receiving other planets and that being a mitigating factor. But he said, in point of fact, he said the reverse is not true, that it's not a mitigating factor if other planets are receiving the malefics. And then you chimed in, and Wade Caves was the other one who also chimed in and really argued this point, because I'd never heard of this before, and then we sort of had this brief back and forth about it, that it's in you guys' conceptualization, and this conceptualization evidently that a number of medieval astrologers have, or some contemporary medieval astrologers have that I hadn't heard of, you conceptualize a planet being received by a malefic as positive and as a mitigating factor, but you conceptualize a planet... Sorry, you conceptualize a malefic being received, or a malefic receiving another planet as positive, and you conceptualize another planet receiving a malefic as negative, or at least, at the very least, not a mitigating factor, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, so, and that's the sort of focal point of this debate, and this is the reason, really, that I wanted to have this episode, because this is actually a really important conceptual and especially, like, practical, technical disagreement, evidently, in traditional astrology that people are probably going to debate for a while, or at least that it's important. It's important to have this debate because it has sort of very big implications for how you interpret charts in certain instances. Because one astrologer would see this as a very positive thing, and one astrologer would interpret it as a very negative thing, just looking at the same exact placement. And it's also interesting because it points to an interesting aspect of the traditional revival right now, which is this difference between, we've got three different levels at which we've got to debate some of these concepts during this revival of traditional astrology. First and foremost, we have like the textual level, where astrologers are going back to these ancient texts written in Greek and Arabic and Latin, and they're reading them and then sometimes coming to different interpretations about what the texts say, largely partially because they're written in old, in ancient languages, or sometimes in dead languages. And so we're trying to translate those into modern times. And sometimes in the act of interpretation, you know, it's not always clear. There's some interpretation involved, and therefore sometimes there's disagreement or debate over the same passages. So on the one hand, we have like this textual debate where now we all go back and sort of it's funny, really kind of like nerd out by
it is. Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. No, it's funny because I was thinking earlier today, I was like, man, I can't wait till this is over because I have like 10 books on my desk and I would like to get my space back.
Yeah, no, I have.
So I like geeked out all over my desk.
What I do is I create sort of like a book moat sort of around my desk and chair so that you have the 10 books, but you've got to keep them open to the specific page and passage.
Sure.
But yeah. So we have that aspect of things, which is like traditional astrologers have to have these extensive, and often do have these extensive arguments over interpretation, and then we have to go back and look through all the relevant texts and all of the references to a specific concept in order to try and back up what we're saying in terms of what we think was being done in the tradition, like 1,000 or sometimes 2,000 years ago. And then we have this separate argument that's sort of related, which is the conceptual argument of does one side make more sense conceptually, or
right.
You know, does, you know, is there a way of conceptualizing it this way, and does this conceptualization lead to one interpretation or another, and so on and so forth. And then finally there's the third bait, and I think that this is, it's interesting from a traditional standpoint, is the very last thing, and sometimes but not always necessarily the most important, which is the practical sort of implications, but also the practical results that astrologers have in terms of their experience applying the techniques to charts, and the argument of what works better from experience, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this debate on techniques, like issues like this, that has to occur on three different levels. So our starting point, though, is also always the textual sort of portion of it, and that's what you and I have been going over the past few days or week or what have you, in looking back through the tradition and looking for quotes that sort of support one part of this debate or another.
Mm-hmm.
And we've come up with about a page or two, two pages of various quotes of like references to reception that seem to imply one thing or another.
I would just like to give a quick shout out to Ben Dykes. Thank you so much for making reception an article in your indexes and almost all of your books. You really helped me out today.
Yeah. Ben's books, of course, are primary sources at this point, you know, because he's translated like 20, and I don't think I'm exaggerating, at least like 20 books in the past decade on medieval astrology, ranging from the 8th century through the 13th century, give or take. And those become our primary texts when we're looking into the textual issues of, you know, what do these astrologers say? And, and how should we interpret that? And then, of course, we're partially relying to some extent on Ben, who himself has interpreted or translated the text from their original languages, and in translating them has had some role in sort of interpreting them as well, and maybe mm-hmm. coloring some of our interpretations from the start, as well as, you know, Rob Hand, because that was actually the first traditional text that I read, or the first translation that I read was I picked up a copy of Rob Hand's On Reception. And so that's always seriously informed my understanding of the concept of reception. And mm-hmm. I mean, you and Wade and Kuba would probably argue misinformed. I think Wade did specifically argue that he disagrees with Rob's interpretation of reception as a mitigating factor, regardless of if the malefic is receiving or the other planets are receiving malefics. So where should we start, or where should we go in terms of this debate? Should we talk a little bit? I mean, are there any specific passages that you want to talk about in terms of maybe starting with the textual debate? I mean, maybe we don't, because I don't know if we should really like read passages per se, or if there's
no.
Any specific...
I think that's a little silly to just like, you know, hold books up and like yell at each other through them. So
yeah,
let's not do that.
It gets into like a weird sort of like biblical debate where people
are
citing
right.
Bible passages like verse and chapter. So I mean, one of the points of the debate, one of the points that we can just discuss is that when I read the introductory statements by Masha Allah, when he first introduces the concept of reception, when I read Benotti's introductory statements in, I think, book six, when he's first getting into horary, and he's talking about, as we were talking about earlier, in that diagram or that table that Deborah Holding has, where he talks about the mitigating factor that reception can play in aspects and sort of making them smoother. Mm-hmm. In all of the introductory material that I read when I look at those authors, I don't see them making any differentiation or distinction between saying that reception is good when the malefic is receiving, but it's not good when the malefic is being received. And I would expect, from a textual standpoint, if your argument was true, that there was a distinction between those two, for them to say that at some point during the introductory material. So that would be one of my arguments from a textual standpoint about this, in support of my position.
I think that's a pretty fair one to make. You know, a lot of times these aren't spelled out as clearly, and we often have to go off of our interpretations of sort of their more practical stances for them. Because one of the things I noticed as I was going through all this, and the reason that our little pages of quotes is only 2 and not like 15, is because there was like this long, not necessarily string, but this theme of like, I may have put a couple down, where like first of all, one could almost argue that reception was sort of developed as a technique almost specifically for malefic planets. Because you have these statements by Mashallah about how, like, if the Lord of the Eighth House, we go back and talk about the Lord of the Eighth House a lot, because those are literally like the third and fourth chapter of Mashallah. Those are the first, like, real practical examples that he gives.
So one of the first horary examples he gives in On Reception is like how to
literally
determine
the first things that Mashallah talks about.
Sure. It's like a horary about will the querent asks, will I die, or something like that.
Right. Yeah, there are two back to back. So that's why we keep going back to that. Is that he makes this point that, like, if the application is to a benefic planet, then it's fine, assuming that that benefic planet is not the Lord of the Eighth House, regardless of if there is reception. But if it's a malefic planet, then there has to be reception. And Benotti sort of follows this up in a more general statement, to where he says something like, benefic planets automatically strive to perfect things, but malefic planets will strive to destroy them unless there is reception. So, you know, you could almost argue that reception was developed, like I said, for the malefic planets, to make them nicer to people, which really, thank you.
Sure. Yeah. And that really, I mean, you know, Nina's article really sparked this in me, because that is definitely the most useful thing about reception is, like, in traditional astrology, we do have in the Hellenistic tradition, I just finished this lecture last August, and it sort of capped off this year of revising my Hellenistic course to include a bunch of new material so I could start offering certificates of completion for it. And I put together this very long, I think it's between like 5 and 10 hour lecture on the conditions of bonification and maltreatment, which were essentially the original conditions of affliction. That affliction mm-hmm. wasn't like this loosely defined thing, but it actually was 7 specific placements or 7 specific sort of types of configurations where if your planet was in this, it was either extremely afflicted, or it was the opposite, which is called bonafide, extremely well placed. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I had to emphasize when going through and collecting, I think I collected 70 example charts or something for that lecture, is that oftentimes in the worst case scenarios of affliction, if the two planets, if the malefic that was afflicting, if there was the presence of reception between the malefic and the planet being afflicted, then the scenario would be significantly toned down and would be significantly better than it might be otherwise. Mm-hmm. So I don't need to like go into the specific conditions of bonification and maltreatment here, but let's just say like if a planet was being opposed or square by a malefic planet, we would generally regard that as a difficult thing. And generally in the example charts, you can see how people would have serious problems in the part of their life indicated by the afflicted planet. However, if there was reception between the afflicted planet and the malefic, then oftentimes, while they would have some challenges in that area of their life, they would still be able to overcome them, or you would still see them sometimes using that in a constructive or almost beneficial fashion. So it's like if it's not something you're paying attention to, you'll overlook this huge thing. Mm-hmm. And this is actually something I'm getting ready for my next podcast to talk about with another astrologer, which is just mitigating factors in general in traditional astrology and the huge role that they play in adding a lot of subtleties and nuances and shades of gray, whereas, you know, modern astrologers often conceptualize traditional astrology as being all black and white, and they just assume that distinctions, like, we make distinctions like benefic and malefic, and then that's it. But in fact, there are these all these mitigating factors and other sort of shades of gray that add additional nuances that actually make things quite complicated. So yeah, I think you're totally right that that's basically the primary use of reception is as a mitigating factor for malefics. So, but one of the conceptual distinctions here as we're doing this, because one of the things we keep jumping back and forth between is there's this issue where there's a difference between the role of reception in guaranteeing the perfection of a matter in a horary chart. So guaranteeing that, basically helping you to figure out if the answer to the horary chart is yes or no, versus acting as a mitigating factor in a natal chart in order to, like, soothe or assuage some affliction between a malefic planet and another planet in a natal chart. And I feel like there's kind of a distinction between those. So it might be important for us to, it's hard because it's hard to not go back and forth when we have examples in mind, but those might be almost two different classes here. And that may be part of the stumbling block for this debate is, I think you and Wade and Kuba are often talking about this in the context of horary charts. And that's especially textually, those are the primary things that you point to in the tradition that seem to support this idea that there's a distinction. Whereas oftentimes I think I'm more talking about it in the context of a natal chart acting as a mitigating factor. Although, you know, theoretically, if you guys were correct, there wouldn't be a huge difference because you still wouldn't expect it to work as a mitigating factor even in a natal chart. Otherwise that might be an important distinction to make, how it works in horary versus how it works in a natal chart.
There may possibly be, because like you mentioned, I would say that certain things like pushing management and whatnot are applicable no matter like what chart we're necessarily looking at. But, you know, maybe reception does function slightly differently in natal charts. I can't ever say that that's something I'd ever considered. But, you know, before you had mentioned that you would like to see some like specific discussion in these introductory chapters about reception, like receiving malefics being bad, and you know, you're right, there doesn't really ever seem to be things that are pointed out, and I went on that little sideway about sort of what I feel like reception was developed for, but I said that so that I could say that a lot of times in like the sort of more practical chapters or whatnot, you'll have specific instances where it is like where it is very one way in regards to how things ought to be received. Specifically with the moon, a lot of times it'll have like general statements like blah blah blah, this will happen unless the moon is received, and like a good example is one from Dorotheus that I shared with you about pregnancy, to where he says that if the moon applies to a cadent planet, it can cause a miscarriage unless the moon is received. So then it's like, again, it's this reception by a potentially harmful planet. And then in Mashallah sort of says something very similar, generally about the suns and combusting planets, that it only protects them if the sun receives them. But even sort of going back much further than that, the talk about like the language that Mashallah uses in regards to his sort of mitigation between receiving that malefic eighth house lord, I don't like it. because he uses that term like that weak reception, that it's a weak reception, it's not a strong reception. And that's really sort of, to me at least, it seems like the only time that's used to mean that. Like, because I think I mentioned earlier that usually weak reception is sort of that imperfect, like reception by like triplicity or like by term, not as strengthening or not as bonding.
Right.
So it just comes off as like this strange term. And like, I can almost imagine Benatti as he's like reading this, he's like, what? That doesn't make any sense. And then like, who knows? But.
And so that's why you think that, because one of the things that you pointed out, one of the things that you and Wade disagreed over is that you thought that Mashallah in this passage, that the interpretation of that was something more like my interpretation, which is that reception acts as a mitigating factor, regardless of if the malefic is receiving or the malefic is being received. But then you pointed out that Banati clearly didn't agree with that, and then his treatment of almost the same topic, he's clearly switched it up so that if the malefic planet is receiving, then it's positive, but if the malefic planet is being received, then it's negative.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay.
And then it's like, you know, and it's something that's just sort of repeated several times, like specifically with, especially with the moon's applications to things, like they're often difficult unless she is received.
Okay. And then Lily follows Banati so closely that Lily repeats this or follows Banati on this as well. Is that what you had said before?
More or less. It's not as clear. He kind of talks about it more in regards to like mutual reception, or that's why it seems his quote is more like, if the Lord of the Eighth receives the Lord of the First and the Lord of the First does not receive him.
Okay.
So like, you see what I mean? Like, it's not exactly the same thing, but it's like,
Okay. And then, so one of the things, I mean, so we're talking about like the textual argument here in terms of citing the sources from like the early medieval tradition and the late medieval tradition and even the Renaissance or like Elizabethan tradition with Lily. But then there's also the separate issue, and I'm still really not clear on this, which is I wasn't aware of this until this debate came up last week, that there was some astrologers that had a different interpretation, and that suddenly it was like you and Wade Caves and that Kuba were all on the same page about it, which I assumed meant that this is something that's been like discussed in some contemporary sources where some people have gone back and read Lily or read Banati and come to this conclusion that, you know, reception only goes, is only positive when it goes one way. But I'm still trying to track down those sources and figure out, I mean, I don't think
there are any really. I mean, you know, I haven't been like formally instructed by anybody. Everything that I sort of, oh, and the reason why I'm just going to say that you haven't heard about this before is because you clearly did not attend either of my lectures. I'm just saying.
Well, we were speaking at the same time.
You owe me a lecture. I don't want to hear your excuses.
Right. All right. I'll get the recording, or maybe I can have you come out and give the lecture. But then if I bring you out to Denver to give the lecture, you're just going to disagree with me. And then that's
fine.
That's embarrassing.
That's true.
Well, I mean, Wade, when I asked Wade about this, who is now, I think, a teacher or is like an assistant teacher or something of Deborah Holding's tutor of Deborah Holding's School of Traditional Astrology. I mean, yes. He seemed to say that he was influenced by her from this. So I'm assuming that this is a doctrine that Deborah Holding herself follows. And Wade seemed to imply that, which must mean that at least in her private material, she must discuss this. So, I mean, I remember in the past, with the Void of Course Moon thing that I discussed on a podcast some time in the past, you were the one that pointed out to me that there was this whole contemporary differentiation, starting with, I think, Sue Ward, who pointed out...
She pointed out very clearly that, hey, this isn't quite right, and then...
Right, with the Void of Course Moon, just to remind people that that's... It's like the third interpretation of the Void of Course Moon, which is that it's the moon not applying to... within orb, within like 12 or 13 degrees to any aspect with another planet, regardless of sign boundary. And that's many people who follow William Lilly.
Oh, but have you've read on reception. You see how Mashallah does it. Isn't that very similar?
Well, when I asked Ben about it, cause I went back to the Latin and the Arabic texts and their basic definitions of void of course and void of course moon. And it's actually really ambiguous. And in Ben's interpretation, I thought it was more ambiguous than Ben did. Ben looked at the Arabic and Ben was like, no, I mean, he doesn't, evidently, or at least at the time when we went over this, didn't agree that it had to do with being with an orb, that it really did have to do with the sign boundary at that point, because they were specifically mentioning the sign boundary as part of the definition, and there would be no reason for them to mention it if that wasn't a component. And that was his argument. So it's like, my point with that was just that there's oftentimes like contemporary astrologers who are recovering traditional astrology today. And sometimes during the course of that, like one of them will make an observation about something like the Void of Course Moon thing, which is kind of like differs from the interpretation that existed previously. Like everybody for the past century has assumed Void of Course Moon is when the moon doesn't make any more aspects before it leaves the sign that it's currently in. and then somebody else comes up with a different interpretation, and then a number of people who are paying attention to their work start following that, and they say, yeah, that definition actually makes sense, and everybody is on the same page who's familiar mm-hmm. with that. But then other people that aren't following that discussion aren't privy to that, and so therefore they're still using the older definition or the previous definition. So that, I think, clearly happened with the Void of Course Moon thing, and I'm kind of mm-hmm. seeing that as, I feel like that's something that's happened here with this reception difference as well, because you have other astrologers like Ben Dykes and Rob Hand who don't seem to be aware of this, or at least in their explicit statements. Like, Hand makes an explicit statement in his translation of On Reception that it's just a mitigating factor for malefics, like, either way. And then he says in the rest of the text, Mashallah demonstrates that. Mm-hmm. So I think this is an issue where we've got differing interpretations that are occurring in some contemporary circles. And because you're paying attention to and still talking with other people, I'm not saying that you're picking it up directly from Holding or somebody else in this instance necessarily, but certainly, you know, you talk with Wade, for example, and you guys have exchanged notes and you seem to be on the same page about it. And also, there has to be some sort of exchange going on there, I would assume, because it otherwise seems like something that, even though you could make an argument for it in the text, it doesn't jump out at me. It's not like a mm-hmm. totally evident thing in the text when you pick up On Reception and read it. It's not, he doesn't say it, as I said, in the introductory material, and therefore.
Well, I mean, to be fair, he also doesn't, you know, we talked about earlier how the definition of how Reception started and how Mashallah mostly talks about it in regards to domicile exaltation. So,
right.
You know, maybe not everything gets covered.
Yeah. Sure. So I guess what should be the takeaway from this, or what is cause I don't think it got really clearly defined, but just so you can clearly define the position that you and Wade and Kuba are taking, or took in that thread at least, what is the position as a general rule?
Well, the general rule seems to be based on readings from, you know, what Banati says and what other authors say about sort of the how Reception is supposed to be handled in regards to malefic planets, is that receiving malefic planets tends to not be a mitigating factor for them. Banati says very clearly that the Lord of the First House receiving Lord of the Eighth House kills him. There is no mitigation there. Mm-hmm. And then you'll have, I shared the Dorotheus quote about the moon applying to a cadent planet causing miscarriages unless the moon's received. So, clearly that's a mitigating factor. But, Dorotheus also is pretty specific about it, saying that only the moon, if the moon is received, not if there is, a reception between them. So it would seem that, based on my understanding of that, that reception as a mitigating factor only helps one way.
So it's only helpful if the malefic planet, if the other planets are in the domicile of a malefic,
right,
and then applying to an aspect with the malefic,
right,
then it's a mitigating factor because the malefic is receiving them.
Mm-hmm.
But if
we have to take care of them.
And has to take care of them. And see, that's part of the conceptual issue, is it goes back to the counteraction thing, because
sure.
In the Hellenistic tradition with the counteraction thing, if you're ruled by a poorly placed malefic, that's actually viewed as negative.
Right.
And so that's one of the issues where, from a conceptual standpoint, especially in the context of the earlier tradition, I have an objection to this, because I'm not sure if it makes as much sense to say that that's a hugely good thing if you're ruled by a malefic, but it's a bad thing if it's the reverse, if the malefic is under the control of somebody else or is relying on somebody else.
Well, and I think I took a second to sort of distinguish between dispositorship / counteraction and reception. Before I had made the distinction about dispositorships and counteraction versus sort of reception, and that the application was really important to it. Because I feel like the difference is that with dispositorship or counteraction, the focus is still sort of very much on the planet in the house, you know, the guest planet, we'll say, mm-hmm. To do whatever is supposed to be done. But with reception and the pushing management and the applying aspect that comes with that, the focus shifts more to the host, you do this. And so if you sort of approach perception as a mitigation factor with the dispositorship idea, then yeah, it makes total sense to say that it should happen either way, because they're supporting each other in a sense. But with the application and sort of this handover of responsibility, it now becomes like that malefic planet's or that host's job to take care of this. And if that malefic planet isn't, you know, some way benevolently like accepting this, then it's just not going to do it. And it's going to, like Benatti says, wreck it. That was a quote, by the way.
Okay. And that makes sense. I mean, I guess I can understand how one would make that distinction, especially once you bring in the concept of pushing management through the applying aspect. But you would view it as... I guess I can understand that argument when it comes to the malefic ruling and having familiarity between them acting as a mitigation, but then why, if the planet is ruling the malefic, why does that become negative as a general rule?
Because, again, the host has to do what the guest wants to do. Like, whatever the guest is trying to accomplish, the host takes responsibility for it. And a lot of times, if we're talking about malefic planets, then they often want to do bad things, like kill people if they're Lord of the Eighth House. And so the host is obligated to try to bring that about if they're able to.
See, I think it's the reverse, that it's the guest. The guest is the one in the weaker position, and the guest is the one that has to rely on the host. And I think that's part of maybe where I would disagree conceptually, because the malefic, if it's in the domicile of another planet, it has to rely on that planet. It's not necessarily that the malefic has free rein to do whatever it wants. And that's why, therefore, if there's a connection between them and a familiarity between them as a result of the reception, that the malefic might be more prone to acting in a constructive fashion rather than a negative fashion.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I just think it really comes down to, like, this difference between, like, dispositorship and, like, I think the application really kind of, you know, makes or breaks the responsibility involved. Okay. Because, you know, if I'm just handing over whatever I'm trying to do to somebody else, then I can do whatever I want, essentially. Mm. Okay. Like, it frees up my agenda to where I can do whatever I want. excuse me. So, like, I just think that's really kind of where the breakdown is. And I don't necessarily think either one is wrong. You know, like, I can see them working fine either way. But I definitely think it really depends on, like, where you come from. Like, what you're trying to approach it from. Because mm-hmm. it seems like you're more focused on who's in whose sign, I guess.
Right.
Like, who's supporting who. And I'm more focused on who's passing on what to who.
Okay. That makes sense.
So I really think that's where, like, the conceptual, like, schism, I guess, lies, like, just there. So,
okay. Well, that actually, I think, is an excellent way of framing it, because then you could see how different conclusions could be come to. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we've covered a lot in terms of explaining sort of the basis of reception and the conceptual basis and what it is from a technical standpoint, and then getting into a little bit of this debate. I'm not sure if we fully made this debate terribly clear. So some people may have problems following it, but hopefully we did our best to break it down as much as possible. I think people should think about this and look at charts. Obviously, and you basically have to do the three things, the three areas that we talked about the three categories that this debate has to take place on, where one is textually and the interpretation of the texts in the tradition and what we think the ancient astrologers were doing. The second is conceptually, like what makes more sense to us conceptually, or what part of it from a theoretical or philosophical standpoint makes the most sense. And then finally, the third part is in applying it to charts, like what seems to take dominance, or what seems to work better in practice. Does it seem to act as a mitigating factor, regardless of if the malefic is receiving or being received, or does there seem to be a major distinction where one of them seems to be really positive, but one of them actually seems to not be positive or not to really help in the way that the other one does? So people should really I think, engage in this. I think this is a really important thing. I haven't really seen any discussions about this, and you guys have said that you're not aware of any contemporary discussions about mm-hmm. this. So hopefully this can be the start of more of a dialogue about this.
You're just trying to get people worked up is all that's happening.
Right. It's like a ratings thing. Yeah. This is like the, what's one of the tabloid? It's like the BuzzFeed or the Fox yeah. News or the Huffington Post of the astrology world is what I'm trying to do.
That's a good one.
I don't know. This is a little too technical of a debate to really, like, I think get
a soundbite out of.
Yeah.
Quick, how can we turn this into clickbait? That's what we need to find out.
Right. No, I mean, if I was trying to do that, I would start a website that would be like 10, you know, pictures of medieval astrologers in their bathing suits or something like that.
That sounds terrible.
Okay. That's how you really draw in the traffic. Everybody, you know. Okay.
Oh, everybody likes that.
Well, yeah. All right. So back to wrapping up this show on a high note. I hope people start thinking about this and sort of discussing it, and hopefully there'll be more discussions about it because of what a huge sort of interpretive difference it makes, both in horary charts and answering a question, as well as in natal charts and identifying parts of the person's chart that work out well or where they have difficulties, basically.
I would just really appreciate like more discussion on reception in general, because it isn't something that really gets a lot of like spotlight on. Like it's this technique that runs, you know, throughout pretty consistently throughout the tradition. You know, Mashallah writes it down, and then it just keeps going, you know, to Lily all the way through, like with seemingly very little changes. Mm-hmm. But like even, you know, contemporarily, reception, like I mentioned way back at the beginning, like really only gets thought of as mutual receptions by domicile. So just sort of any sort of awareness that can break that would be really great.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. And I think you're doing a big, huge role in bringing that back. And your lectures on that are probably available from the NCGR conference and the ESAR conference, right?
I know they're from the ESAR, and that one's probably better because I had more time to do it.
Okay, so the 2014 ESAR conference, and you can find that on their website. Yeah. And then you've also written on the Association for Young Astrologers website, you've written a two-part series on reception, right?
Yes, it's going to be a three-part eventually.
Okay.
So look forward to that.
Yeah, so people can find that in the articles section on youngastrologers.org.
Yes.
Okay, and it's, I mean, one of them, the second part is titled Planetary Reception, Guests and Host.
Yeah, the first part is about pushing, specifically, okay. Background, and then the second part is reception, specifically.
Okay, great. So yeah, people should look for that, and hopefully, I mean, we'll have more discussions about this, maybe in the comments section of this post on theastrologypodcast.com, and maybe eventually on some forums or something like that. All right.
And from there, it spreads.
Right. Well, yeah. I hope this isn't like one of those, our discussion is not the final word on it, and that this gets like transcribed and somebody translates it into other languages and they're citing our discussion. Like,
and then like, no, there's no conclusion. Like,
right.
That would be terrible.
Well, I mean, I think the conclusion right now is, I mean, I still feel pretty strongly about my position about that reception can be a mitigating factor either way when malefics are involved, and that there's this other group of you and Wade and Kuba and probably other people that think that it only goes one way and it's only a mitigating factor if the malefics are receiving the other planets, and that it's not a mitigating factor, that it's actually can be negative if the malefics are being received by other planets.
I don't think just naming people is very fair, because it's, I don't know.
Well, I'm not trying to single them out. I was trying to give them credit, not single them out necessarily.
Well, that's good, I guess.
Or what?
But I mean, like, they're like definitely, like, it's definitely coming from somewhere. Like, there are definitely passages in Banati and in Mashallah that kind of make it questionable. And even not just those two. So it's not just something that, like, a small group of people have access to, I guess, to sort of promote one way or another. Like, it's definitely available there.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think it's there's an interpretive thing because we disagree about the interpretation of a collection of ancient texts. And so on the one hand, there's both an interpretive disagreement where we're disagreeing about the textual tradition and what was happening in traditional astrology. And then there's a separate thing where from a conceptual and a practical standpoint, we also disagree about, you know, what makes the most sense philosophically and what works better in practice. So that's like a contemporary debate where it's like each side would like to go back and project our preferred opinion back on the textual mm-hmm. tradition and say, you know, clearly they agree with me because of this passage versus, you know, somebody else says clearly they agree with me due to this other passage. But mm-hmm. because we seem to disagree on those three levels, what we have is a contemporary debate about the subject. And I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong, and I'm not trying to single them out, anybody out necessarily. I was just trying to identify, since I've not otherwise been able to find any specific articles or like books where this is discussed extensively, discuss like who some of the people are that are, you know, adopting certain positions, so that if people want to learn more about those positions, they can go to you or they can go to Wade mm-hmm. or Kuba or, you know, what have you, in order to fully get a better understanding about where you're coming from and what your argument is, and then sort of weigh it on their own terms and decide for themselves. So, yeah, I mean, I think we did that pretty well. Others that sort of take your position feel like, or my position or what have you, feel like we've adequately addressed both of them. And maybe we haven't, because this is sort of condensed, and certainly there's other like nuances and other things we could have gone into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but hopefully this is a good start for the discussion, opening up discussions about this topic. Yeah. Did you have any other points that you wanted to make or things you wanted to say?
Not particularly.
Okay, great. All right. Well, thanks for coming on to the show for your first time. I think I've been trying to get you on here for a few years now, so I'm glad we finally we got a good topic to talk about.
Yeah. It's nice to be here. It's like, oh yes, I've made it.
Yeah, you finally made it. You're doing lectures and writing articles, and you've got the new medievalastrologyguide.com website, which I'm very excited about and I think is going to be a big deal. So yeah, people should definitely keep an eye out for you in the future, and hopefully I'll be able to have you on again in future shows.
Oh, definitely. That would be nice too.
All right. Great. Well, thanks everyone for listening to this episode. I'll have another one. I'm trying to get on a sort of weekly show release schedule where I record a new episode and release one approximately every Sunday or every Monday. So keep an eye out for the next episode in about a week. So that's it. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.